Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Age of Innocence by Renee George. Narrated by Margaret Strom. Chapter 1. When I walked out of the bathroom, Ezra Holden, Detective Hottie, a.k.a. the man I loved, slid on a gray members-only jacket. While his jeans weren't so tight I could see London or France, they did hug his butt in the most delicious way. "Dude," I said, "you have a bodacious booty." He chuckled as he pushed the twin beds together to make one big bed, then turned around to face me. He had a month's worth of beard and mustache going on that I still hadn't gotten used to. His brows rose as his bright green gaze landed on mine.
"Wow, Nora, those bangs are gravity-defying."
I patted the top of my hair, courtesy of freeze spray. Fortunately, I'd had my roots touched up earlier in the week, or this ode to the 1980s style would have been a no-go. As it was, I'd used enough hairspray that if someone flicked a lighter too close, my hair would become Aquanet flambé. I went up on my toes as he dipped his head. His lips brushed mine in a way that made my entire body sing. He slid his hands over my hips and pulled me close, my stomach pressed against his straining groin.
"I can't believe this is the first time we've been alone in 2 weeks."
"That'll teach you to go off undercover with the feds," I told him. I cupped my fingers behind his neck and twirled the sandy blonde curls that had gotten longer since he'd begun working with the Joint Drug Task Force. "I'm so happy you made it back in time for this weekend." I sighed as he pressed his forehead against mine. "But I would have understood if you'd decided to stay home." He caressed my cheek.
"What? And miss you in a ruffled mini-dress with the biggest shoulder pads I've ever seen? Not on your life."
"This old thing," I said coyly, batting my fake eyelashes at him. My dress was golden yellow and was the exact one I'd worn to the winter semi-formal in 1986. After my mom died, I'd found several of my outfits in wardrobe bags hanging in the closet of my girlhood bedroom. The dress was a bit tighter in the waist and hips than it had been when I was 17. But thanks to the miracle that is shapewear, it still fit. I can't believe I have a legit reason to wear it again. He gave me a quirky half-smile.
"It's fun seeing you get all I love the 80s for a weekend. Although I was surprised they made us give up our cell phones."
Schools Out for Murder Incorporated was a new murder mystery immersive weekend venue in an old renovated high school outside of Button Falls, about 40 minutes from Garden Cove. The owner-operators had strict rules about no technology. That included laptops, tablets, and phones. I'd done a couple of escape rooms, so I understood the reasoning. Still, I felt a little naked without my cell. The nice thing, though, was that Ezra couldn't get called back to Garden Cove for any reason. After his long absence, I was glad to have him primarily to myself for 2 days. "I guess they don't want anyone cheating," I mused. He smirked.
"I'm a detective. I already have an unfair advantage."
"Only if you think applying cop logic to a fictional mystery is an advantage." Ezra snorted.
"We'll see who solves the murder first."
"Hey," I leaned into him, "we're partners in this."
"In all ways,"
he said before lifting me off the ground and carrying me across the room. I giggled as he lowered me to the bed, until my ass slid between the mattresses. "This is so not going to work," I said with a laugh. He shook his head.
"They really did a great job of converting these classrooms into guest quarters. but they definitely didn't make them couple-friendly.
Ha! Maybe that's the point. I unwedged myself from the crevice. It's a school. The brick walls had been painted a silver sage color, making the room feel less institutional. But I bet we can get creative.
Oh?
The corners of his eyes crinkled as he grinned down at me.
I'm all for creative.
I patted the bed. I know you are. He sat down next to me.
Maybe we should skip the dance.
He playfully nipped my lower lip as his fingers danced down the middle of my back. He frowned.
Where's the zipper?
It's on the side. He nuzzled my neck while he explored my dress with his hands.
Interesting.
The sound of the zipper unzipping was followed by my grateful exhale as the bodice relaxed and gave me more breathing room. I think we're going to be a little late, I said. His warm palm splayed across my ribs as his fingers slid under my bra. He kissed up the side of my neck, the brush of his beard and the heat of his breath pulling strings of pleasure through me. I leaned my head back and moaned. I felt his satisfied smile against my skin.
We're going to be a lot late.
I'm good with that. Three sharp knocks elicited a sound close to a growl from Ezra.
Go away,
he said. Come on, you guys. Jilly yelled from the other side of the door. Let's go. I sighed as Ezra lowered his forehead to my chest.
We have to go, don't we?
He asked. It's her birthday, I said. So that's a big yes. When Jilly had found out Schools Out for Murder Incorporated was doing a 1980s-themed mystery for their opening weekend, she'd immediately reserved 6 spots. It hadn't taken much for Pippa Hines, the third in our bestie trio, and me to get on board with the plan. Jilly was turning 54, and her children, twins, were college-aged now and were no longer living at home. In other words, empty nest syndrome was real. To lift Jilly's spirits, we'd been down for whatever was going to make her happy. I'd closed Sense and Sensibility, the boutique where I sold organic beauty products that I created and curated, for the weekend. Garden Cove was a seasonal tourist town, so we relied mostly on outside orders to keep our profits in the black during the winter months. Pippa, who used to be my assistant when I worked for one of the largest beauty suppliers in the United States, managed the front of the shop. As for Jilly, she was an established massage therapist with 20 years of experience. Honestly, her local clients were our best year-round customers. Getting her to come work with Pippa and me had not only been a good best friend move, it had also been great for business. Jilly knocked again. Are you coming?
Apparently not,
Ezra muttered. I snickered. We'll be there in a couple of minutes. Long enough for me to get zipped up and Ezra to lose his, disappointment. Ezra held up his hand and flashed me 5 fingers 3 times in a row. Be there in 15 minutes, I amended.
5. And not a minute later. You hear that, Easy? Jilly said, using Ezra's nickname.
Why am I in trouble?
He asked. Because she knows you about as well as I do. Ezra winked at me.
You'd be amazed at what I can do in 5 minutes.
Settle down, risky business. This hair and this dress will take longer than 5 minutes to put back together.
Fine.
He got up and helped me to my feet. I sucked in my gut and zipped my dress. We'll sneak away later tonight.
Promises, promises.
I grabbed him by the collar of his members only, not a euphemism, and tucked him close for a kiss. One I intend to keep. I let him go and walked to the door. But until then, we have a dance to go to, followed by a mystery to solve. I slid on a pair of yellow Converse low tops. I was not cramming my feet into a pair of bright-colored chunky heels for the sake of authenticity. Besides, Converse were just as popular then as they are now, and my feet would thank me for it later.
"Cute shoes,"
Ezra said. I went up on my toes and turned my ankle to him. "I'll have you know that my favorite shoes in the 80s were a pair of high tops in just this color." He smiled.
"I think they're, like, totally awesome."
"Aw, I didn't know you were a valley girl."
"A valley what?"
He shook his head.
"There's a whole page devoted to 1980s slang in our check-in packet.
I studied it while you were getting ready."
He put his arm around me.
"Do you think they'll have food?"
I gave his belly a tap.
"You had a double cheeseburger and large fries on the way here."
He frowned.
"You ate some of my fries."
I held up two fingers. "Two fries.
I feel like I haven't eaten in weeks."
"Tapeworm," I said. He frowned as he opened the door.
"You're not funny."
I laughed. "I really am." He bumped shoulders with me.
"Spaz."
"Dork," I countered. "Let's boat."
"Huh?"
"Motor on, dude."
"Dude,"
he said with a grin.
"After you."
When I stepped out into the hall, an older middle-aged man wearing jeans and a t-shirt hustled past me. He smelled like he'd been picking herbs in a dank forest of pine trees. In other words, like Dracar Noir, which could have been called what high school boys smelled like in the 1980s. Mr. Rude clipped me with his shoulder and sent me tumbling sideways against the white lockers lining the walls.
"Hey!"
Ezra shouted. I grabbed his arms to keep myself upright, preventing him from going after the rude jerk. The man gave us a one-finger wave without looking back as he continued his fast walk down the hall. While the guy was gone, the sweet, herbal scent of his cologne lingered, along with a memory.
"Pizza face."
A guy wearing a yellow and blue leather jacket says, as he slams another guy into a locker. He has BF in large letters on one side of the jacket, covered in silver and brass letter pins for football, basketball, and baseball. On the other side is a bearded Viking head with a horned hat, probably the school mascot. The left sleeve has the number 10 on his upper arm. The teenager's dark, short-cropped hair is damp, but his face, like those of all his friends and the boy against the locker, is a blur. The pungent aroma of cologne and body spray is heavy in the air. The hallway is similar to the one we're in now, only it's painted yellow with gray lockers. The speaker's friends, also wearing letter jackets, laugh as each of them gives the kid a shove as they pass by, calling him names.
"Dickbag,"
"douche,"
"dumbass."
The boys are as alliterative as they are cruel. A woman shouts, "Get to class before I report you all. You won't be laughing when you're benched on Friday night's game."
"Chillax,"
the instigator says, as the rest of the teenagers leave. The bully follows after them, and the kid they've tortured throws his books on the floor and slams his locker shut. My smell-o-vision, as my best friend Jilly called it, faded.
"Whoa,"
I said, as the sage-green halls and white lockers reappeared. "That was intense." Ezra had his arm around me, holding me steady.
"A vision?"
"Yeah," I said. "A strong one." After dying for 27 seconds during my hysterectomy a little over 2 years ago, I'd returned to the living with a nose that could literally smell memories. Only they weren't my memories. The psychic remembrances always belonged to someone else, and they were always tied to aromas that evoked strong emotions, which meant, thankfully, the memories weren't always about murder and violence. Sometimes they were about moments of pure joy, love, pride, and a myriad of other emotional remembrances that sense could evoke. I couldn't quite put my finger on which mood had triggered this last memory.
Bad?
Ezra asked. I nodded again. No, but yes. I still felt out of sorts.
Bad enough to make it a police thing?
I leaned my head against his shoulder, my crispy bangs smooshing against his bearded face. Do you have a DeLorean I don't know about? Ezra arched his brows.
You want to go back to the future?
Brushing up on your 80s movies, I see.
Great Scott, Nora,
he teased.
I had the entire DVD collection when I was a kid. I've watched the movies multiple times over the years.
On DVD, huh? I'd been a junior in high school when the first movie had released in theaters, and the original videos had come out on VHS tapes. I didn't want to think about how many years after its release Ezra had owned the collection. I waved my hand. Anyhow, the memory I saw was about a school bully when this place was still Button Falls High. So even if we had a time machine, there's not much we could do about it now. He pulled me into his arms again and kissed me stupid. With a crooked smile, he said,
Nora Black, I'm so thankful my destiny has brought me to you.
The line was from Back to the Future, when George approaches Lorraine in the diner. Only Ezra said it with such a sweet sincerity it made my heart squeeze. Then he kissed me again in a way that made me want to shove him back inside the room. Ha! I replied breathlessly as I patted his chest. We better get going, McFly. He wiggled his brows.
I'll grab the plutonium.
Chapter 2. Electric Avenue spilled out of the open gymnasium doors. I started bouncing to the familiar beat. A guy dressed in a powder blue tuxedo, sporting a flock of seagulls style hairdo, including spiked sides and a long swath of bangs down in his face, stood outside the doors. He was talking to a woman in a white suit jacket with huge shoulder pads, a black and white polka dot chemise with a black pencil skirt, and white patent leather pumps. Definitely more stylish than anyone I went to school with in the 80s. Her medium-length hair was styled in big, bold curls, making her more Joan Collins than Joan Jett.
I think I'm underdressed,
Ezra said. You're perfect. Next, we saw a jock with a mullet, two cheerleaders, a blonde and brunette, along with a man in tan slacks and a cardigan, congregating on the other side of the corridor. The cheerleaders wore white cheer sweaters with a big green C on the chests and short green skirts. The man who'd shoved past me walked through the double doors, blocking off the opposite hallway. He joined the group and put his hand on the brunette cheerleader's arm. She tugged away, and the jock leaned in and said something that made the older man scowl.
Interesting,
I whispered to Ezra. I bet those are the actors.
They seem tense,
he noted. They could be rehearsing. Or it's opening night jitters, maybe. He leaned over and kissed my cheek.
Maybe.
The woman with fancy hair smiled at us and gestured toward the open doors. From a distance, she'd looked youngish, maybe late 20s, early 30s, but up close, I noticed that her unlined forehead didn't have much movement, a classic sign of Botox. Even so, she looked great. She gave us a stern smile and said,
Go on in. Students, enjoy the dance.
The woman was playing the role of teacher chaperone, and even though it was pretend, for a second, I felt like a schoolgirl. I grabbed Ezra's hand and dragged him inside to what can only be described as an arts and crafts winter wonderland. In other words, it was delightful. The gym ceiling was covered with white and light blue crepe paper streamers, dripping with paper snowflakes. In the center was a mirror ball reflecting white light across the polished wood floor. There were about 30 other guests out on the floor in full 80s regalia, dancing to the funk reggae hit. A punch table was set up on the right side, covered in a white tablecloth with blue plastic cups, stacked near three large see-through drink dispensers. It was a bit too modern for the 80s, but I let it slide because the containers were definitely more hygienic than an open punch bowl. Centered on the back wall of the gym was a DJ dressed in bright yellow and electric blue nylon jogging outfit, finished off with a yellow fedora. He had a pair of headphones on as he danced behind his stand. Jilly, wearing the cutest puffy-sleeved, ruched red dress, waved at us. If my bangs were gravity-defying, Jilly's were orbiting the moon. "Oh, my God!" I squealed. We did an old handshake we'd come up with during our junior year of high school that ended on a fake joint toke. Not that we did a lot of drugs in our teens. It was just something that we thought made us look cool at the time. "You are totally bitchin'." "No doy," she responded with a twirl and a hair flip. She was wearing red pointy-toed pumps with low heels. Scott Graham, Jilly's date, wore a white blazer with a scooped neck, blue T-shirt, white pleated pants, and a slick pair of blue and silver penny loafers. Scott was a local surgeon in our hometown of Garden Cove. Jilly had been going out with a hot doc since the fall, and I had a feeling it was getting serious between the two of them. Peppa and her husband, Jordy Hines, who were both born in the 80s, joined our group. The 30-something-year-olds had embraced the decade, though. Jordy wore a red leather jacket with tight black and red color-blocked leather pants. He had his long brown hair down around his shoulders, and frankly, his vibe screamed big hair band. Pippa wore a fabulous curly wig that reminded me of a perm I had through most of the 80s, even into college. Her dress was made from fuchsia-colored satin with a lace neckline like Molly Ringwald's dress in Pretty in Pink. "Wowza, Pips! That's freaking awesome!" I whistled. "Did you make that yourself?" She laughed. "I wish I was that talented. I got it from an online shop. It's good, right?" I nodded. "It's totally boss." "We're going to start a drinking game," Jordy said. "Every time one of you says, totally, we take a swig." "That's an excellent way to end up with alcohol poisoning," Scott said. "I'm in." Jilly tilted her head sideways. "Totally." Pippa and I snickered. We knew Jordy was joking. He didn't drink, ever. He'd been in Narcotics Anonymous for over 12 years, and while he wasn't an alcoholic, he told me once that alcohol lowers inhibitions, making it easier to justify doing drugs. That was something he wasn't willing to chance. There was too much for him to lose. He'd been looking at Pippa when he'd said it.
"When is this thing getting started?"
Ezra asked. I quirked up a brow.
"Eager for murder, huh?"
He shook his head, then winked at me.
"I'm eager for something else, darling. It's been a very long 2 weeks."
The opening guitar licks to "What I Like About You" by the Romantics poured out of the speakers.
"This is my jam,"
Jilly said excitedly. She grabbed Scott's hand.
"Come, dance with me."
He willingly went with her, which put points in his column for me. Jilly had a troubled past when it came to men. "See? Asshole ex-husband." So, I was thrilled that Scott was turning out to be the nice guy he had seemed from the beginning. Jilly whipped her hair around to the new wave jam, her face a beacon of pure joy. It was times like this that I thought my BFF was possibly the most beautiful person I knew. By the look on Scott's face, I was pretty sure he felt the same way I did. A couple stood near the punch bowl. The attractive woman wore a lime green tank top with a pink and yellow tutu, pink leg warmers, and clear jellies. She had a multitude of colorful bangles adorning both her wrists. She tugged at her side ponytail. The guy she was with wore black jeans and a jacket that looked like it had been bought at a Michael Jackson memorabilia sale. His hair was styled in a Rick Astley pompadour. They looked late 30s to early 40s, and I was impressed with their commitment to looking commercially 80s. Pippa sucked in a noisy gasp of air. "That's Nellie Locks." She pointed to the Rick and Madonna-looking couple. "I have her channel saved on my Pinstabook account. She does these great makeup tutorials while talking about raising three kids. Her show is called Childproof Locks." I nodded. "Clever." I'd never been interested in having children of my own, but Pippa had an 11-month-old at home, so she had a stake in the ins and outs of raising kids. "You think I'll be able to get her autograph?" Pippa asked. "Probably." "Oh, my God. I'm wigging out." I heard a woman shout, "It's Nora. Nora Black." I turned at the sound of my name. Two women dressed in poofy, ankle-length prom dresses, one purple, the other orange, hurried in my direction. Pippa grinned. "It seems Nellie Locks isn't the only one with fans here." My Pinstabook channel, Sense and Sensibility, named for my shop, had a modest following, but it wouldn't be the first time I'd been recognized by homemade soap crafters while I'd been out and about. "How are you?" the woman in purple asked. "It's been ages." "Okay." She acted as if she knew me. Probably not a fan. The excited woman had a Princess Diana hairstyle, and I couldn't tell if it was a wig or her natural hair. She looked around. "Is Sean here? I heard you two tied the knot." Sean Rafferty had been my high school sweetheart. Shortly after we'd started college, we'd gotten married. 5 years after that, we'd divorced. We'd loved each other, but we'd wanted different things from life. Now, Sean was the police chief in Garden Cove and married to a lovely woman who'd given him two handsome boys. And he was my current boyfriend's boss. "We're divorced," I told her, still trying to piece out who she was.
"I'm so sorry to hear that," Orange said sympathetically.
Her hair was styled similarly to her friend's, and there was something about the two women that seemed familiar. Even so, I couldn't place them.
"Don't be.
The divorce happened over 25 years ago." I laughed, feeling awkward at the reunion with two women who were practical strangers.
Ugh.
Strangers who had known Sean and me when we were a we. Had they gone to Garden Cove High? I'd graduated in a class of 48 total students, and while I'd known all their names at one point, I barely remembered a handful of them now. I looked toward the dance floor where Jilly and Scott were rocking their moves, and I wished she was next to me. Her mind was a vault when it came to our teens. She remembered everything from those years. Ezra draped his arm around me in a casual but meaningful way.
"How do you two know Nora?"
he asked the women. I cast him a grateful glance.
"We were her sorority sisters," Purple exclaimed. "Kappa Nu!"
Orange cupped her ear, leaned in toward me, and added,
"Kappa who?"
I reluctantly responded with a weak, "Kappa you too." I pinched Ezra on the ribs when he chuckled, and it made him squirm.
Fun.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?